Thanks, Mum.
You're listening to the Hijab Forum podcast, a podcast that inspires creatives to make meaningful content to pursue their passions. My name is Manira, and I am the creator of the Hijab Forum, and I sit down with entrepreneurs and everyday people to talk about their processes, the lessons they've learned, and how to make an impact. So grab your favorite jersey hijab, underpiece that most likely will slip off anyway, and get ready to amplify your life. Assalamu alaikum and welcome back to the Hijab Forum podcast. My name is Manira, your host, and today I have sitting with me Dr. Qali Hussain to discuss her trials and tribulations in becoming a double board certified trauma surgeon while raising her 6 children, mashallah. We will dive into her great advice for professional young women, Muslim women, advocating for yourself in the workplace and balancing a successful career with a busy family life. So as I said earlier, we have Dr. Qali Hussain, and I want you to take it away.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, everyone. Thank you, Manira, for inviting me to your show. do you want to start with a question? Because I'm really bad at I'm really bad at intros.
No, that's totally fine. Don't worry. I think that was more than enough. And it was a mouthful, what I shared about you. And that's just literally a glimmer of what her life is like, mashallah. So as I was telling Dr. Qali Hussain before we started recording right now, I was literally stalking her once I saw your interview with Nomadic Hustle. And I'm not even really big on YouTube videos. It just came across my feed one day. And I was like, oh, okay. A surgeon with 6 kids, but she looks like a kid. So I watched it and I was like, wow, mashallah. Like, she's not one of the children. It's literally the mother of the 6 kids who is also a trauma surgeon, mashallah, and in the States. And when I saw all that and I heard the whole interview was about an hour long, I was so intrigued, mashallah, that I had to reach out to her on Twitter. And luckily I got a response. So thank you for accepting my request. So I'll just get on with it because I know we have a jam-packed episode today and I want to make sure you guys are all getting the good details out of this and the good value bombs that we will be dropping for this episode. So let's start with maybe just telling us more about your area of expertise and sharing with us, one unique tool that Muslim women who want to pursue their passion need to know and probably don't know.
All right. So my field of expertise is trauma and acute care surgery, as well as critical care. So that means I did 5 years of general surgery residency after medical school and 1 year of a critical care fellowship. So one of the biggest problems of me getting to this point is the fact that throughout my pursuit, the storyline was always, as a hijab wearing Muslim woman, look at who is doing this type of job, right? Mm-hmm. Is there anybody that looks like you that's doing this job? Mm-hmm. It's never been done. It'll never be done, was what was told to me when I, worked really hard, got into the position where I was training to be a surgeon. Mm-hmm. And then I started having kids. And that became the next thing that I was told, no, it's impossible. The vision that you have for your future and what you want to be is impossible because there's nobody that looks like you that, that is also a mother who mm-hmm. has done this successfully. So, instead of finding, helping me find a way to make those things happen, the answer has always been, no, it's not. It's not possible. It's not doable.
Wow. Yeah, so, of course. Yeah, no, I completely understand. And in saying that, we don't see representation to this day in a lot of different fields. So imagine the women who, at least alhamdulillah, now we can say, for example, Grey's Anatomy has a hijabi, but that's one show and one profession, and there's so many other professions people are doing, like Halima Adam, for example, the modeling. So in just mm-hmm. in general, we don't have enough representation for a lot of fields, the majority of the fields, we don't even exist. But yes, right. Continue.
Yeah. And with the lack of representation, everybody's recommendation is, you can't be what you can't see, right? Ooh, if you don't have representation, I believe that was said by Marie Edelbright. I'm not 100% sure on the name, but mm-hmm. Anyway, you can't be what you can't see, right?
That's a big quote.
If you can't see, what you want to be, then what? Are you supposed to give up? right? So
yeah, exactly.
my biggest goal right now is, you know, be the change that you want to see in the world, right? Create your own changes. If you are being told that you do not belong in this space, or this has never been done, someone that looks like you has never, you know, done this before, then you find ways to get around whatever obstacles there are in your way and make it happen for yourself. Because sadly, you know, we live in a world where, you know, not everybody wants to help each other out. You're shown the exit door before you're shown another, you know, alternative pathway. So mm-hmm. how do you create the alternative pathways for yourself? And that's one of the things that I focus on now.
No, that's amazing. And the fact that people still to this day, 2020, would think that it's okay to be different. It's not okay. I feel like dogs have better rights than us Muslim women. You know, like forget the fact that we're even human. We're a triple threat. Like you said in your Nomadic Hustle interview, you're already a Muslim, you're a female, and you are a hijabi. You mm-hmm. Oh, and you're black. Forget that.
And you're black.
That's the biggest part. I should start with that. But that's already a quadruple threat. But in saying that, the threat part should be intimidating and not a threat to people. It should be more like, oh my God, like she's doing all of this with the face of like society looking down on her, but she's still persevering and still striving and thriving. And that's what we should let people focus on, and not the fact that, oh, we just can't do it because there's nothing out there that looks like you. So how dare you think that you can be the first person?
You know, the person that I learned that from was a 13-year-old bride.
What?
Okay. And that 13-year-old bride was my grandmother.
Okay. Yes. Right?
So she got married at the age of 13 to my grandfather, who was 40 years old.
Wow.
Right?
Wow.
So from her generation to her children's generation, she changed. She was the only person who changed the outcome for them to be completely different than hers.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. As she was raising her kids, she had a total of 10 kids, 6 girls, Mashallah. 4 boys. And so when her daughters, you know, started going to school, she enforced the fact that education was important and the most valuable thing for them.
Yes.
Right. And even though she never went to school, she didn't even read or write. She used to always say, you know, what is the first word of the Quran that came down?
Mm-hmm.
Iqra. Right.
Mashallah.
So she enforced the value of education equally between her boys and her girls. And so much so that when they worked hard enough to get, you know, scholarships abroad, she let them travel, you know, internationally to get their education.
That's big.
Young women who were unwed in a society that says, forget going to college. Once you're done with with high school, it's time for you to settle down and start having kids.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So she single-handedly changed, you know, the family tree for her daughters, you know, from her being a 13-year-old bride to her daughters being, you know, world-class educated. You know, my mom went to Italy. My aunts went to Thailand and London. And we have family here in the States, you know, who came here to get their engineering degrees, you know, because she had the foresight to say, you know what? You know, I don't have to ask anybody permission. I don't have to, you know, argue with anybody. This is what I want for my kids, and I make it happen.
Absolutely.
Right? You're not going to argue, you know, going to go picket with a government, say, I want you to, you know, give us this right. Islam gave us that right. You know, as women, we have had the right to education, to wealth, to, you know, to own property. We've had that. You know, we don't need to fight for our rights. We already have them. It's just we need to stop being shackled by society. And that's one of the biggest lessons that I learned from her, because, you know, I had this conversation with her and she told me the story when I was a teenager, struggling to, you know, put all my effort into pursuing this this career, and people kept telling me, oh, you know, you're wearing the hijab now. Yeah, you know, this is not going to be for you. You either have to give up the hijab or give up this dream. And she said, wow. Why are you asking them permission? You know, is it up to them? No. Who is it up to? You. Go work for it and get it done.
Like how dare they stand in the face of your success? Because
right.
It doesn't fit into their normal.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And no, absolutely. And the fact that your mom, like your grandmother, mashallah, put that much respect and honor on the women in your family, showed mm-hmm. their brothers, like your uncles, the fact that women can do whatever it takes to be who they need to be and what they want to be. And that just being a woman is not enough of an excuse to not get something done. Like, you need to get it done. If you feel like that's something you want to do, you can go and do it. Nothing can stop you. And the fact that your uncle right. saw that is beautiful in the Somali community, especially.
It's absolutely amazing. And one of the things that, you know, I get a lot of emails and messages through social media asking me, you know, women questioning their ambitions and saying, you know, I fear that if I am ambitious and if I, you know, get this degree, that I am less of a wife material.
Oh, God. Wow.
Like, that's sad, right? Yeah, that's the most recent one that I got. And it's recommendations that are given out by, you know, a lot of Muslims. It's not just the Somali culture, some, you know, Muslim cultures that say, oh, you know, if you're educated, you might be intimidating to your husband or whatnot. Mm. If your level of education is going to scare somebody away, then that is a good filter. Right. If someone yep. is not strong enough to handle a woman who's educated and who can speak up and, you know, stand up for herself, then that is a good filter for you to say, you know what, if this is all it takes for you to not, you know, find me as, you know, a quality partner, then maybe, you know, you're not the right person for me. So, wow. you know, I yeah. would turn it around on people and say, well, you know, it's not that I may not be good wife material. Maybe they're not good husband material.
Look at that. The fact that we always think, okay, what if we're not good enough? But what if they're not good enough? There's two people in a party. Well, right, this relationship, I should say, not a party, but it takes two to tango. And if I'm not great, then how can I be great to anybody? Forget you, like, for myself. But yeah, because you also want to be great for yourself as a man.
Exactly. And it's always, you know, taken as, you know, for a woman, oh, you know, you're not going to be wifely material, meaning what? You're not going to cook, you're not going to clean, you're not going to do something. Like, I'm a mother of six, okay? I'm a surgeon, you know, alhamdulillah. I'm a surgeon. Alhamdulillah. Does that mean that I don't cook? Does that mean that I don't clean? Does that mean that I'm not a good mother or a good, you know, good wife? Absolutely not. Right? When I am home and I am not at work, I'm not a surgeon. I'm a mother. I'm a wife. Right? So the fact that we have a hard time, you know, keeping these two identities together in the same person, I think is also another thing that we have to kind of tackle and say, you know what, the two are not mutually exclusive. You being ambitious, yes, you need to be ambitious and, you know, hardworking at work. But when you're at home, you're a completely different person.
Absolutely.
Right? It doesn't take away you being home and motherly and, you know, a good wife. It doesn't take anything away from you being, you know, the career person that you are. And when you're at your work, it, you know, and being driven and being ambitious, doesn't take anything away from you being a wife or a mother. So I think we need to get away from these two things being black and white. I mean, I think we need to look at it with a lot of nuance, because that's what it is. That's, life is nuanced, but we tend to look at it as just pure black and white.
Yeah. And it's easy for people to be like, well, you don't fit the narrative for this. Like, how are you a mother of six, but you also want to be a surgeon outside the home? It doesn't fit the normal narrative, but it's the fact that you're like, no, this is my normal. It doesn't have to be okay with you. It's what I want to do, and my family knows that it's fine.
Yeah, to be honest, it is so much easier being a trauma surgeon than a mother.
Spoken like a true mom. I definitely hear that.
Seriously, like when I'm at home, I'm like, okay, there's no book, there's no guidelines, there's no nothing.
Oh God, yes.
That tells me how to, you know, do all of this and manage kids and a husband. But at work, I'm like, you know what? This is, you know, the standard of care. You do this, this, and this. I need to operate. Let's go to the operating room. I can do this.
Right? There's a tool for that. There's an answer for that. You're absolutely right. And you feel like you're failing at home. Honestly, with my son is only 2.5, guys, but he is a handful, but at the same time, he's so sweet. So you're like, I don't know if I'm doing it wrong, but at the same time, you're like, but what if I'm doing it right? And it just doesn't show until like he's like 50 and he did it right then. Like, you never know. You just give it a try and you give it a go. But at work, you're right. Like, there's a handbook for everything. There's rules and regulations, things you follow, and there's punishments if you don't do it right. And there's ways to see your rewards. Like, there's milestones in place. So like you said, like, yep. It's hard to figure out what's okay and what's not, and what's like right and what's wrong at home. But at work, there's a book for that.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. So no, I definitely hear that. And mashallah, like, I completely understand what you're saying. So in saying that, take us to a time in life, in your life, where you would consider your worst moment and tell us that story.
So my worst moment is when I think I was, I think I had my twins.
Oh my God, so wait, pause. There's twins in the mix? Mashallah, keep going. I did not know that, guys, I swear.
Yes, I have one set of twins, alhamdulillah. So mashallah. I have like five pregnancies, so I have one set of twins. I think I had twins, my twins, and I was pregnant with my sixth one. I was working nonstop for about 2 weeks, and I was really, really tired, I think. And my husband said, let's go out for ice cream. And so we, you know, get all the kids in the car. And I don't know if it was right after Ramadan or something around that area, but I was just so exhausted. I hadn't taken any break. I've just been, you know, work nonstop, come home, mother duties, you know, wifely duties, this and that. And I did not take enough time for myself. And so I got in the car and just out of nowhere, just completely broke down in tears, like just sobbing, crying nonstop, and scared my husband, scared my kids. And they said, you know, mommy, what's wrong? And I was just so tired and so exhausted. And like, I just wanted to sleep for a complete 24 hours without a worry in the world. And I couldn't verbalize that. I couldn't verbalize the fact that I was tired because, you know, we're always, you know, as, you know, working mothers, there's always the guilt of, okay, when I'm not home, I'm neglecting my kids, right?
Yeah.
And so when you're home, you're overcompensating and doing, you know, all the extra stuff. And by the time you're done taking care of everybody else, you know, you took care of your work, you took care of family, there's no time left for you. And so I've did that for many, many years, and it finally like took a toll on me, my body psychologically, and I just broke down. And my husband was so sweet. He just sat there and let me cry it out, calm down the kids.
We got good man, good man. Don't interrupt the tears, yes.
Oh, he's a great man. So we went, got ice cream. I think he took the kids for the rest of the day, like took them to the park or something. And I went, you know, and just, you know, took the rest of the day to myself and just relaxed and took a long nap. And that's when it hit me that, you know, in trying to do it all and be a superwoman, we neglect ourselves. And if we're not healthy and if we're not, you know, taking care of ourselves, it's like what they tell you, you know, in an airplane. If we get into a crash, put the mask on yourself. My God. Have a child.
Yes. I always refer to that.
Before you put it on your child. Yes.
No, I had a mentor.
If you have a child before. Yeah, exactly. Before you put it on your child, you put it on yourself, right?
Yes.
Because if you're dead, if you can't breathe, you can't help it.
You're of no use to anybody. Absolutely.
Yep.
You know, it's crazy. My mentor, he said that to me all the time, like back in when I was still working at a psych clinic. And he would be like, Munira, you always want to help everybody else. But when you're on an airplane and they ask you to put on your breathing mask, who do you do it for first? Yourself or the person beside you, or the person that you came with? And I'm like, you have to do it for yourself because you're of no use if you're not alive, right?
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with
that. So I learned that lesson. That's when I learned that lesson of I have to, you know, we fill our schedules, you know, with everything that's important, but we leave out ourselves, right? Your health, your well-being is just as important, and we're the ones that get left out most of the time. So that's when I learned to you know, squeeze myself into the schedule, you know, give myself a little bit of a break, start exercising, start doing, you know, like getting massages and yoga and things like that. And it makes a world of a difference. I mean, you just, you know, even though you're giving yourself a little bit of extra time to, you know, to devote it to just your health and well-being, your productivity actually goes up, right?
When
you are healthy and in a good, you know, mental space, your productivity and your creativity is just so much better. Like, you don't realize it, like how much that has an impact on your overall, you know, well-being, your work, even, you know, the time that you're spending with your family. It's not, you know, when you're tired and exhausted and you fall asleep while watching movies, right?
Exactly.
You're actually interactive and have the time, right?
No, absolutely. And the fact that like a little bit of mindfulness, a little bit of just self-care, like take a bubble bath or if you, you know, go for a walk, read a book that you've been dying to look at and like get involved in, that little bit of time, those 5 minutes to yourself or even just breathing exercises can do so much for your body and your mind. It's ridiculous. And the fact that we are so okay with neglecting ourselves first shows us how selfless we are as mothers and as, you know, as Muslim women. But at the same time, we have to be a little bit selfish sometimes, just not even consider it the word selfish. Maybe that's a negative connotation.
I specifically don't use the word selfish because that means you're not supposed to care for yourself.
Thank you. And I find that just the wording itself sounds so negative.
It's
that you
negative.
Don't want to think about it.
Yeah,
exactly.
No, it's like you're part of the family, right? Mm-hmm. As a caregiver, like there's caregiver fatigue. I mean, we recognize this in healthcare when there are people who are caring for, you know, their loved ones who are sick or who have cancer or end of life. That caregiver has, you know, some, like they get tired being in that condition all the time. They get fatigued. They get, depression. We tell them you need to take a break. Right.
Yes.
You need to be able to take yourself out of the situation, take care of yourself so that you can provide care for your, you know, for your loved one.
Yes.
The same thing with mothers. Nobody tells mothers, like, we actually make mothers feel guilty for taking care of themselves.
Yep.
We make them feel guilty for putting themselves in daycare or putting their kids in daycare or having I think this is one of the things I talked about in one of the speeches that I gave where, you know, every step that I took, there was an insult, right? Oh, you know, you're going to medical school. Who's going to marry you? When I got married, oh, you're never going to have kids.
Wow.
When I had kids, it was, oh, you know, what's the point of you doing all of this now? You know, it was all a waste of time and money. And when I went back to work, oh, you're a terrible mother. You know, what's the point of having kids if you're not going to take care of them?
Wow, right? That's terrible.
Right? So, and then when I was finished, they were like, oh, we were so proud of you. We knew you could do it.
We knew you could do it. No, you didn't, sis. Let's go back to when you said A, B, and C.
Right? So regardless of what you do, you're going to get criticized, right?
Yeah.
And maternal guilt, you know, guilting mothers for having ambition, guilting mothers for working, is one of the things that contributes to the lack of self-care and the overwhelm.
No,
so
absolutely.
It is, I refuse to use that word selfish because you taking care of yourself is an important part of you taking care of the rest of your family.
It's a necessity. It should be considered something that it has to be done. Like it should be in the rule book, quote unquote, that we don't have, but we need to mentally write
create.
Up because exactly. Like we need to make sure that we make time for ourselves. Like put on some nail polish if that's what you want. Do your hair at home. Like take a nice long shower. Whatever it looks like for you and whatever resonates with what you want to have, like to feel good at, then do it. Don't feel bad. Like you feeling bad just shows you that you think it's wrong. It's not. It's meant to happen for you too.
It's absolutely not wrong. Yep.
Absolutely. No, that's a big one. Thank you for sharing that. So let's go lighten up this mood a little bit and take us to a time in your life that you had an incredible aha moment. And you've had, and tell us that story. And then we'll go into like the details of that. But what moment were you like, oh my God, this is it. Eureka.
Okay. So that moment was, I think I was a third year resident. I was on service at one of the hospitals and I had two kids by this time. My intern year, I had my first child, and my second year, I had my second child.
Wow, mashallah.
And so both years, I was being told, you know, this surgery is not for you. You know, you should quit. What's the point? You're wasting, you know, your time and money. You're taking up somebody else's spot. That's what mothers are told in surgery, is
of
that you're
course.
Taking somebody else,
oh,
you
God.
Know, somebody
Even
who would
surgery.
Be, yeah, somebody who could be more productive. You know, you're taking up their spot. Because, you know, after you're done, you're going to be a stay-at-home mom anyway, right?
Mm-mm.
So So for 2 years, I was being told that, you know, I wasn't meant to do this. And then I came back my third year. I think that was like the only year I didn't have any kids. But it was the year that you were transitioning from being a junior resident to a more senior resident, where, you know, you are a little bit more responsible. They let you, you know, they let you do a lot of things on your own, and yeah, you're dealing directly with the attending. So the attending I was dealing with directly was the chair, was the chief of the hospital. The chief of surgery at the hospital. So I had this patient who was bleeding to death, and nobody wanted to take care of this patient. Like all day long, I came in. It was a Saturday morning. I saw the patient. I was like, this patient needs to be moved to the ICU. We need to figure out where he's bleeding from so we can either operate or do, you know, another, you know, minimally invasive procedure so we can stop the bleeding. But he needs to be, you know, taken care of. Mm-hmm. He's been in the hospital for like a month and had a whole bunch of other problems. So people were like, oh, you know, there's no point in dealing with this because he's got a bunch of other problems anyway. He may die, you know, whatever. And my training is like, if there's a surgical problem, there's a bleeding problem, you don't let the patient die from that. That's fixable, right? Mm-hmm. So you take care of it and do whatever you can to fix the problem. If they're going to die from something else later on, like, you know, if it's meant to be, if Allah wills, fine. But right mm-hmm. now, what's the problem? Bleeding. So that was my goal. It's like, my goal was to fix that. I called attending after attending, and nobody wanted to touch this patient. Like my, you know, every single attending that I called, they said no. So that morning, I told the team that was, you know, taking care of him, this is what you should do. This, I'm going to see if I can get him to the operating room or have some other procedure so we can stop the bleeding, but please take care of him. I go take care of my other patients. I come back, check on him in the afternoon. Nothing was done. All the recommendations that I made, nothing was done. The patient's, you know, sitting there, he was like white as a sheet. Wow. Blood pressure tanking, you know, in this, like, normal is supposed to be like, you know, 120s, it's, you know, down in the 70s. And so I was like, okay, I'm taking over this care. I, you know, go see the patient. I put, you know, do procedures on him, put central lines in him, give him a whole bunch of blood, correct his blood pressure, correct everything. And then I called all my attendings, and nobody wants to touch him. Finally, at 2 a.m., like this is all day long. Okay. It started at like 8 o'clock in the morning, all day long. Nobody wanted to touch this patient. Nobody would.
Is this not illegal? Like on some level?
Wow. No, okay. Like you're a resident. Attendings are like, you know, so my surgery attending was like, I can't operate on him because nobody localized it. We don't know exactly where the bleeding is. The GI attendings, they were like, we put a scope down him. He has an ulcer, but that ulcer is not bleeding. I'm 100% sure. Like they've seen it multiple times, and now they're like, it's not that ulcer. I don't know where this guy is bleeding from. So they've tried to stop it multiple times. He's just, you know, everybody's like, we've given up. So finally at 2 o'clock in the morning, I get a hold of a radiology procedural, they're called interventional radiologists, where they can go through, you know, inside your blood vessels and things like that.
Okay.
So I got a hold of that attending, and I said, listen, I'm sorry to be calling you at this time, but I've been trying all day to have all these other people take care. Everybody's telling me, no, you're my last resort, and I really don't want to lose this guy. And he's like, okay, he comes in and he looks at the patient's chart. Like the patient is getting sicker and sicker and sicker. And he's like, mm-hmm. Why are you calling me now? I said, all day long, I've been trying to get a hold of people. They've been ignoring me. The team that was taking care of him said, this guy's going to die anyway. What's the point? So here we are. So this guy, he's like this big black guy. He calls every attending that ignored me that day. He calls him in. He's like 2 o'clock in the morning. He's like, I want you guys getting in here right now. So
good.
They all get in. Like my attending, she calls another attending, the GI person comes in, they call another backup person, the ICU people who've been ignoring me, everybody who was ignoring me all day long, he brings them in and he just like rips them a new one. He yells at all of them to say, you guys left a third year resident to sit here and advocate for this patient, and you guys just basically, you know, ignored him all day long. This is what we're going to do. We're going to go to the operating room. We're going to figure out what's going on with this patient. And then we'll discuss, you know, your care of this patient tomorrow. So we go to the operating room, two surgeons, a GI attending, a vascular attending, the ICU attending, the radiology, six attendings, seven attendings even, came in. They find where the guy was bleeding from. It's the ulcer that he had that everybody swore up and down he wasn't bleeding from.
Of course.
We fix it. We fix the thing. The next morning, the guy is, you know, perfectly stable, like looks like nothing wrong, you know.
Wow.
Nothing ever was wrong. He's awake. He's like, he was cursing at me the whole day. He was telling me, go F yourself. You what? With the hijab thing. I don't want you taking care of me. Blah, blah, blah. All right.
Of course. The next day. So terrible.
The next day he's like, he's perfectly normal. He's still cursing. I'm like, fine. I'd rather have a you know, a life.
Wait, he's still cursing you out after, well, he doesn't really know what happened, I guess, during the whole situation, but
like, wow, I would rather have an alive patient who's cursing at me than a dead one any day. Man, so yeah. Whatever.
So like a true surgeon, mashallah.
Like, so the next day I'm rounding with a chief of surgery for that hospital and I tell him the whole story and he goes to his office. And within 30 minutes, I get an email that's CC'd to me. He emails the chairman of the entire department.
No, he does not.
My program director, who's been, you know, one of the people who's been telling me that it's impossible and I don't belong there and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And says, you know, if it wasn't for Kali, this patient would have been dead today. And man, that was the day that I was like, okay, all this whole time I've been doubting whether I can do this or not. That day and like that that attending Dr. Berger gave me, you know, the confidence that I needed to say, you know what, I don't care what anybody says, I will have the children that I will have and I will do this job because it has nothing to do, you know, with mm-hmm. my ability to be a surgeon. My having kids has nothing to do with my ability to be a surgeon and to take care of my patients.
Absolutely. Wow, that's, hold on, like that was so much information. I literally was like at the edge of my seat because you guys, you literally just saved somebody's life. Like Eli obviously was written for this to happen. Regardless, exactly. The fact that you still were like, no, not on my watch. Like, this is my job. This is my passion. How dare people yep. think that this is okay to let somebody go when we have the tools we were literally given. We trained for this position for this
exactly.
time. And we're now going to wipe it away because, oh, well, he's going to die anyways. No, you don't know that. You can't play God. So exactly. Alhamdulillah, like for you, like that man, yes, he may be still crazy or whatever you want to call it, but or a racist or what have you, but he definitely low key, if he knew, I don't think he'd be talking to you like this or talking about you like this. So mashallah, like that's a big deal. And for that to be your life-changing moment for your career path, I'm really proud of you for even like using that as a moment to like switch it around and say, no, not on my watch. I'm going to make this happen for everybody, including myself.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, we're all, regardless of all the other, you know, whatever people want to label baggage for you, mm-hmm. we're all there for the same reason, right?
Absolutely.
Everybody has their home life. And that's the decision that I came to after that is everybody has their own home situation, their home life, right?
Yeah.
No man is ever picked on to say, oh, you have wife and kids. Yeah, this may not be for you. But as a woman, even though you're there, you're doing the job, that criticism is always laid bare,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So my, you know, the conclusion that I came to after that is, you know what? We're both here. We're both equally capable. As long as I'm doing my job, you have no say in what I do outside of these walls.
Yeah. Like right? Whatever happens between the time I come in and get out is here. But besides
that's all that matters.
That's yep. exactly it.
So compartmentalize. Yeah. So the feet, and that's one of the things that I usually talk about is feedback, right? We take a lot of feedback from people and people usually give us, what is it called? Unsolicited advice. Right?
Yes. Yes.
Like everybody feels like they're helping you by giving you all this unsolicited advice. And most majority of it is really not helpful. So the what I call it is filtering the feedback, right?
Yes.
So like the same person, you know, so people ask me, well, if somebody's, you know, being critical of you and dissuading you from your goals, how are you also going to learn from that patient or from that
what
person,
can you take
right?
away from it?
If,
yep.
if that person is someone who's supposed to be teaching you, how are you supposed to learn from them if they're constantly criticizing you? I'm
Absolutely.
Like, you know what? I can filter the feedback they give me. If the feedback is based on my work and it's going to increase my knowledge, I will accept that. But if the feedback is personal and something that has absolutely nothing to do with my work and my professionalism and my skills,
strictly
then I walk
malicious.
Away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I walk away and I'm like, you know what? Thanks, but no thanks. Right.
And
you don't
you have
to
be
take,
able. Sorry. Yeah. Go on.
No, I'm like, you don't have to accept, you don't have to accept every feedback that you get. You don't have to internalize every criticism you receive, right?
Exactly.
The way
exactly.
I usually teach it is you basically put it on a table and look at it and say, what am I going to take? What am I going to leave on the table? Right.
And
take
you have the choice, right? That's the thing people don't realize. Yep. You don't have to hear everything that people are saying to you.
Nope. You can filter it.
No, definitely. Yeah. And sorry. So let's just continue on the questions because I got a few more here and I want to make sure we all get the right information out of this mashallah trauma surgeon that we're probably never going to see twice in our lives. Well, inshallah, actually, we're trying to change the narrative, so I shouldn't say that. We're hoping that you are one of the many trauma surgeons that are Muslim females. So let's word it that way. How about that?
Definitely. Yes. Yes. I agree with that.
Definitely. And I definitely want that to happen for sure. So in saying everything you've said to us so far, what is one thing that you are most fired up about today? So anything that's happening for you right now, anything that you're working on, what is your current, I guess, your agenda?
So one of the things that I'm fired up about a lot of things. So one is the Professional Muslim Women Podcast. That is a podcast hosted by myself and another Muslim physician who's also Somali, Dr. Hani Ahmed. She's an internal medicine doctor, and she's also a mother of two. So we interview professional Muslim women in all different fields and talk about their journey, their experience, what they've learned along the way, and how they've been able to overcome the obstacles to achieve success in their respective careers. Mm-hmm. And so we host it on all platforms where you can get your podcast. And this is most of our audience are young, aspiring Muslim women who need, that representation to see, women who look like them doing amazing things. Yes. Because that's one of the things that, we've all lacked is, and the reason we're kept out of all these different, competitive fields is, there's nobody that looks like you that's doing it. Mm-hmm. So we want to change that narrative and tell the stories of women who are doing it, and to inspire our young women everywhere that yes, it is absolutely doable.
Absolutely.
Yes. So that's one of the projects we've been working on for the past year. We're very excited about that. One of the other things that I'm working on, I'm currently working on creating a time management course. I give speeches and do conferences and workshops. And one of the things that I get asked more than anything else is, how do you manage to do it all? Mm-hmm. Right. How are you a surgeon? And how do you, take care of family and do all these things? And one of the most important things, in addition to having, a very supportive family, alhamdulillah, is, managing your time well. How you spend your time is very, very important. Like one of the major things that I did, when I was going through my training and having kids, was I was completely off of social media, right? For 10 years, from 2008 to 2018, I was completely off of social media.
No, that seems unreal, guys. Like I'm literally cringing even thinking of the idea of doing it for like 2 days. 2 days.
No, like I the only thing I had at the time, I think, was like Facebook. I it took me 3 hours to turn it off because you're replying to all your friends and you're making new connections. I completely cut it off. That was my intern year, was 2008, and 2018 was after I've been in practice for 3 years, established myself. Wow. We moved to another state, got the kids into school, had a routine, did everything that we needed to do to, alhamdulillah, get stable. And then I said, okay, now what do I want to do? And so that's when I started, sharing my story and my experience to motivate young women, so that we can change the narrative and the issues that I had. Mm-hmm. The fact that I was being told I couldn't accomplish something just because I am who I am. I am a Muslim woman. I wear the hijab. I wanted to be a mother. This, in order for me to maintain my authenticity, I was told that a lot of doors were closed to me. So that is that is what I'm really excited about right now, is to change that narrative, to say, stop putting us in a box. We don't belong in a box, right? You can have multiple identities, and you can still find, make a position for yourself, and make that change yourself. So I'm starting off with a time management course. But one of the things that I want to do, I actually have a YouTube channel that I recently started. Mm-hmm. If you look up my name, Dr. Ghali Hussain, you'll find it. But I want to create a leadership academy. I want to teach young women the skills they need, the leadership skills that they need to make the changes they want to see in the world. Mashallah. And for them not to wait for anybody to help change the world for them. You know, if they want to be astronauts, you know, they should be able to have the power to go and make those changes themselves without waiting for, you know, someone to come save them, right? No, we don't need a knight, right? Mm-hmm. We can make it happen, and you can be a mother, and you can be, you know, practice your deen however you want, and you can be whatever you want. That's what I want to work on. And so my goal is to establish this leadership academy, to equip them with the tools and the mindset and the skills that they need to make those changes themselves.
Well, that's wow. That's mashallah. Like, I don't even know where to start with this, because literally everything you said resonates with me. Like, I'm literally the same. I have a hard time with time management. I have a hard time with dealing with people who don't look like me, telling me what's right, what's wrong, what to do, what not to do at work, at school, everywhere, right? So in saying that, you start to get discouraged because you hear it so often, you start to normalize and think that that's the way it's going to be forever. But then when you hear people like you, Dr. Ghali Hussain, who literally tells us, no, this is not okay. Like, we are not meant to be in a box or a bubble or whatever they want us to put us in. That's not who we are. We need to change the narrative. And by having somebody like you who has been through it, who has persevered, who had the guidance, mashallah, from your grandmother, you've literally taken all of that and said, no, I'm going to use this as a weapon to fix the narrative for people who are just like me, who don't know how to get through it. I will show you the way by empowering you, empowering what you know, and using your skill set to move forward in life, which is very hard to do, mashallah, but you are willing to take that challenge. And I applaud you, mashallah. I really hope that this goes exactly the way you want it to be. I feel like I need to sign up for the time management one. I'm not going to lie. I'm pretty terrible at time management. My husband thinks that I'm okay, but I'm like, no, I can do better. So
you know, the time management one is, that's the one that I have, you know, ready, almost ready to release. So as soon as that one is done, inshallah, I will start posting some inspirational things, some motivational things on my YouTube channel to kind of, you know, get the ball rolling. And inshallah, I'd like to have multiple other courses available so that, you know, these things, that it's really hard to get all the things that I want to teach through, you know, podcast interviews here and there, even, you know, speeches that I give. Mm-hmm. And that's part of, you know, my time management is because I have a lot of responsibilities at home and at work, I find it really hard to go out and do as many speeches and conferences as I want to. Yeah. So I'm going to take that energy and put it into a course where, you know, we have, you know, technology. You can access it online on your phone anywhere. Yeah. So and so that's the avenue that I want to go and empower as many young women as we want, because the way I see systems changing, one of the things I always say is, you know, systems can change. Mm-hmm. And we can be part of that change. No system is going to, and no big corporation is going to make changes to accommodate you.
Absolutely.
Right? You have to force the change, right? When I was in my program and I was having kids, we didn't have a maternity leave policy. But guess what? By the time I was done, we had one.
Wow. Right? That's big.
So you can be, you know, instead of conforming to whatever the standard is, you can be the impetus for change. Right. If like when I first came to the operating room, they said, oh, you're not allowed to wear a hijab in the operating room. I'm like, nope, try again. I'm wearing it. How are you going to make me let me come into the operating room with my hijab?
How can you accommodate my needs?
Exactly.
And it's like what you said in the Nomadic Hustle episode, where I was so, mashallah, like impressed with, was you literally came with your demands and said, no, this is what I need to have done because I bring this to the table and I can help your organization or your hospital or whatever you guys are doing. I can bring these skill sets to you. What can you do for me? Because this is what I require. So let's come to a negotiation where we both can be happy with what we have written down.
Exactly. If you don't value yourself, nobody else is going to value you.
Absolutely. No, 100%. Right. Like that's how it is. And you know what's funny? This is what's taught to other faiths and other backgrounds of people. They've had years of experience in this. We're just learning ourselves now. As young Muslim women, we don't have a path. Like we literally have to be like, where do we go from here? I think this is right. Yep. And if we fail, guess what? We don't know any better. So we sit there and be like, oh my God, I failed. But in reality, no, you tried. You got further than anybody else who hasn't even tried and thought they would fail. So in using these weapons and like kind of using them as tools to move forward, that is the hardest, but the most rewarding thing I think that we all need to teach our young daughters, our young sons, our grandkids, whoever it is, or our friends, our family, people who don't understand that it's okay to not be perfect, but to make your own version of perfect that suits you. Yep. That's all that matters, man. And that's where it goes. Like, that's how it should be for everybody, for anything, mashallah. So
yeah, perfection is in the eye of the beholder, right? What's perfect for you might not be perfect for everybody else.
One person.
So,
one person's trash and the person's treasure, but like in lots of ways, right? Like I might not want to be a surgeon, but I know that I can use these skills to do what I want to be. Somebody else might not want to be a podcaster, but they can use the skills we talk about today to speak about other things in public or in private spaces, and use these skills that we're literally letting them know they already have and do something else with it.
Exactly. So inshallah, those are the things that I have in the works. So hopefully they will be getting ready pretty soon.
No, this is all good. And I hope you share with me the dates that you're releasing it so I can definitely be the outlet for you as well and get your information and your programs out there for everybody else who is in the States or who can access online, especially with this COVID stuff. Everything is now going to be online. I feel
everything is
going to
be online. Exactly.
Yeah. And you might as well learn something that's beneficial for you while you're stuck at home. Right. So you might as well do something great with it. All right. So we're going to get into the lightning round because I like this part and I was dying for this part because I feel like I just want to know what you think and where your mind's at with these things. So what was holding you back from becoming a trauma surgeon? What was the one thing you're like, nah, I can't do it. It's not for me.
The one thing was I wanted to have kids and I wanted to have a lot. And what I was told was, you know, surgery and kids don't mix.
I can hear. So I can see that being said.
Yeah, that was the one thing that was holding me back until I had someone tell me, residency is a finite amount of time. Once it finishes, the lifestyle afterwards is whatever you make it. So do what it is that you love, then figure out lifestyle afterwards.
Yep. Oh wow! But look at that; it did not hold you back at all. So good on you. You found a way. All right. Yep. So, what is the best advice you've ever received? It could be from a family friend, it could be your children, it could be your husband, anybody.
The best advice that I received was, I think, and I always talk about her, is my grandmother. Yeah. I think one of the things she's instilled in me is stubbornness. She said, don't ask permission for anything.
Good.
She said, don't ask permission. You want to get things done, find out how to do it. If somebody is not going to do it for you, go find another person who will, or do it yourself.
Good job. No, she's right. Absolutely. And that can go into any which way you want to take
anything.
It. But yeah, mashallah, that's great. And I love your grandmother. I don't even know her, but kudos. She raised some great grandchildren. Mashallah.
Allah
rahmah. So share one of your personal habits that contributes to your success every day.
One of my personal habits is being a little bit, obsessive compulsive about calendars and putting things on the calendar. I put things on the calendar for my husband to do. When he wants to communicate, he'll put stuff on there. The kids, like we have a big calendar that we share. Like today, I had this meeting on my calendar, but it only showed up on my calendar, not the one that I share with my husband and the kids. Like we're in mid transition, so my daughter, my 10-year-old daughter, was like, "That wasn't on the schedule."
I love her too. Mashallah, good on her. She's like, yeah. Hey, mom, you didn't tell us what you're about to do right now.
So one of the, like, it's one of the best, you know, when you have a lot of people and everybody's busy doing, you know, all the different things. That is one big communication, you know, one way that we all communicate is we put everything on a shared calendar. And so we can all know what's going on with each person.
That's really good. And it's just not even a personal habit. It's like a mutually respective habit that you're trying to show everybody you respect their time, but you want them to respect yours as well. And that's beautiful, especially for a family. Yeah. You guys have to be around each other. You might as well respect each other, right? Yep. Okay. So can you share an internet resource, like anything like Google Chrome, Google Calendar or Google Drive, any internet resource that you use right now, besides like your calendar, your physical calendar, that you can share with our listeners to use in their productivity, to uplift their productivity?
I mean, I use Google Drive a lot. Mm-hmm. I, you know, for my podcast, for documentation, PowerPoints, for courses that I create. So I use that a lot.
Yeah. And I can definitely attest to that as well. Google Drive has been a driving force for my own personal like podcasting / blogging / business life, work life, home life. It helps you keep everything aligned and in tune so that you don't lose your mind and forget.
Exactly.
No, that's a great one, guys. And then what book would you recommend to our listeners and why?
Oh man, where do I start?
Can of worms.
I have a lot of books that I've been recommending recently. But one of the actually recent books that I read was How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Oh my God, you're speaking my language. Go on. I definitely have a copy of that in my room right now.
I love that book. I mean, because, you know, people tell you, oh, you know, this can't be done, this can't be done. Anything can be done. It's just, you know, how do you interact with people, right? Like, for example, you can, you know, we get a lot of unnecessary feedback and we get called terrorists. You know, people think we're oppressed because we wear a hijab and blah, you know, all those things.
Yeah.
You can either get offended all the time, or you can, you know, use that as a way to interact with people. If I'm, you know, wearing a hijab and someone that I'm interacting with either at a job interview or at work or whatever, and all of a sudden, you know, they start attacking me, and they start being racist, you know what? I just learned a lot of information about that person without me saying anything.
Wow, that's deep. Wow.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to get offended. I'm just going to say, you know what, if I was going to do business with you, you know what, I no longer need to do business with you, because like I the way I always said, I'm like, my hijab is like has superpowers, right? Mm-hmm. It can tell me a lot about you before I even open up my mouth. Right.
It literally like questions your other person.
Exactly. So you know what, don't get offended, use that information. Right. So, and that's one of the things I love about that book, is it teaches you how to, you know, how to interact with people and how to always assume good intention, right?
Yes.
So some people, you know what, they'll ask me, oh, you know, where are you from? Like a lot of people will get offended, like, oh, I'm American, why are you asking me? But you know what? I know I look different than the average American, right?
Yes, you acknowledge that.
So if they ask me, I'll make it like a little interesting, like, guess, where do you think I'm from? And then they'll start, you know, and that's a good conversation starter. Right. And you see where their mind is at, and you can have a conversation with people. I use that as a way to educate them and say, oh, no, I'm actually from here. And we start talking about culture and I educate them and they learn more about me. And now we're, you know, it's a mutual understanding and knowing of cultures. You get farther doing that than getting offended of, oh, how dare you ask me? You know, I'm American. Right.
Yeah.
So I think bringing a little bit of nuance, you know, learning how to communicate with people will take you a lot farther than being offended all the time.
Yes. You can flip the narrative and be like, okay, you know what? I won't take it negatively. Maybe they're generally asking, where are you from?
Yep.
And exactly. I want to, you think they have the best intentions until they show you they don't. Exactly. So never assume the worst, which I love. And never I love that book. I heard that book actually through Audible first. I think it's by Dale Carnegie.
Dale Carnegie. Yeah.
Yeah. That's his name.
Like in the 1930s or something, like a long time ago.
But yeah. It's funny how it still is so relevant today. And when I heard it, I'm like, oh my God, like you just have to be soft.
It's not timeless. Soft.
Exactly. You feed into the person's ego a little bit without going too much, but to get what you want, you have to kind of play the mind game, but you do it so skillfully. And guys, read the book. I don't want to give it away, but
it's a really
good book. Yeah, no, I definitely have the physical copy and I have the Audible version, and I loved hearing it and reading it. So both ways, it was a great addition to my little collection. Okay, this is just a random question I want to ask you, but let's imagine you woke up tomorrow morning in a brand new world without your kids, without your husband, identical to Earth, and you knew nobody. You still have your experience today with your trauma surgeon background and your history of what you've gone through. Your food and shelter are also taken care of on this little world we've created, but all you have with you is a laptop and $500 in your pocket. What would you do in the next 7 days?
Oh, wait, did you say I still have my husband and kids, or I'm by myself?
No, you're by yourself. You know nobody. It's just literally this next 7 days you're spending on this random new Earth that looks just like Earth, is identical to our reality here, but you don't have anybody you know.
I don't have anybody I know.
No, but you have all the experience you have from your work life, your home life, like that's all there, but you woke up with nothing, like without these people with you that you know.
Without family, without nothing?
Mm-hmm.
I'd be depressed.
And that, my friend, shows you how much family means to people.
Seriously, that's been the one thing, like when I looked at my future, I'm like, you know what, if I don't make it as a surgeon, if I don't make it, you know, into whatever other career that's possible for me, like I'd be fine. But if I didn't have kids, if I didn't have a family, if I didn't have a husband, I would be like, I'm a people person. And I don't know if I'd be productive. I'd be like,
no, that's mashallah. That's a good answer. I never even thought of that in that way. That shows you, my mind was like, well, okay, I'm going to start doing this and that. No, I forgot about my family. So joke's on me, I guess.
I'd be like, go get to know people so I can make a family.
Right. You got 7 days. You got to figure it out, man. No, that's great. I just want to know your input. Cause I'm like, you know what? Like people have been put in different scenarios all the time. Like look at us right now with the COVID. We're literally put in a new reality and we're forced to adapt, right? So I just want to know where your head would be at. And that's a really good answer, honestly. That shows you how much family means to you, and mashallah, like the fact that you have such a great tribe behind you that are so supportive, that speaks volumes on who you've become and who helps you become even better at what you're doing every day, because you have the time and space to move forward with them and grow with them, which is so beautiful. I definitely applaud that, mashallah.
Thank you. All right,
Dr. Khalid Hussain, I'll end with sharing a parting piece of guidance that you actually want to share, not me. Sorry, it's you sharing a parting piece of guidance and the best way we can connect with you. So this is a time where you can just give us like random info about how to connect with you, and just maybe some kind words to share to our listeners.
Okay. Well, you guys can reach me. I'll give you my social media stuff first, and then I will give you my parting words. Okay. You can find me on Twitter at Dr. Khalid Hussain 1. Facebook, I think I'm Khalid Hussain. Facebook page is Dr. Khalid Hussain, and Instagram is Dr. Khalid Hussain. And my YouTube channel by the same name. So my parting words is basically, you know, I think every young woman is more than capable of, being the change that she wants to see in the world. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a lot of negative messages that come at us, you know, telling us what we can and cannot do. But what I would like to leave with is, you know, you are the one who can define what limits you,
absolutely,
right? What what you can accomplish, how much you want to accomplish is completely up to you, 100% up to you,
right?
Society, institutions, you know, all those things can be changed, but you are the captain of your ship and your destiny. So, and that's one of the things that I hope to work on is, you know, how do we change our narrative? How do we change the narrative of young Muslim women to say, you know what, tune out all these negative voices and create your own path?
Yes.
And inshallah, we can work towards, you know, a day where we don't have to do this, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
We don't have to say, you know, we want to change the narrative. It should be the norm that, you know, the freedom and the liberties that Islam has bestowed on us, we shouldn't have to fight for. And so, inshallah, working towards the day when we can enjoy those without having to go through, you know, all these battles.
Yes, no, absolutely. Mashallah, that was good and that was deep. And that spoke to different levels of like just everybody who's listening, you know, whether you're in your 40s or your 20s or your late teens, if you're listening and you heard those words, honestly, those are truer words. You'll never hear truer words that are said so gracefully, I should say, mashallah, and from somebody who has so much wisdom in what she's gone through and what she's achieved. No, I definitely thank you for joining me today, Dr. Khalid Hussain, and I thoroughly enjoyed our conversation and I loved watching you on YouTube and all your interviews, mashallah, and I hope you keep striving and thriving in connecting Muslim women together. And I definitely will be tuning into your podcast. So you guys, I will give you all her socials in the show notes so you can click there, and it'll also be on our website, and I will be posting it on our Instagram once the episode is up. And yeah, no, thank you so much for having us with you today and letting us be in your space, giving us a little bit of your time. And I definitely wish you all the best.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
All right. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum salam.
Just because the episode is over doesn't mean you can't continue discussing the topic. We've created a forum that's easy to use right on our website. Also, if you sign up for our mailing list, you will have access to our monthly giveaways. The website is www.hijabforum.com. Once again, it's hijabforum.com. If you liked what you heard today, please rate and review our show on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you're listening. We'll see you next Monday on the next episode of the Hijab Forum podcast.